Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, several years ago, my next guest was struggling to breathe, suffering what appeared to be recurring pneumonia. But a second opinion from a doctor specialising in rare diseases led to a really dramatic improvement in her circumstances. And both of them here are here now in the studio. Linda Sheehan, you're very welcome, Linda. And beside you is Professor Cormac McCarthy, who's consultant respiratory physician at St Vincent's University Hospital and also associate professor at UCD. So thank you both for being here. I'm going to start, though, with Linda. You might just tell us, what was happening and when did you first notice that you were in a bit of trouble?
Yeah, no problem. So it roughly was about 3 years ago. I was in a shop and I was struggling to breathe, just going around. And my dad was like, you should really check this out. So I went to the doctor, figured it was a chest infection, pneumonia, the regular things. My doctor checked my stats and it was only 82%, and they're supposed to be between 90 and 100. That's the normal range. So she got really concerned and she checked my chest and she said, you really don't sound right. So she sent me straight to UHL, where I was treated with the best of care. And I was under a Dr. Aidan O'Brien, and he did a bronchoscopy on me. And for the blood test, and he said, it looks like APAP, but I'm not sure. I'll get a second opinion.
What's that now, APAP?
So APAP is autoimmune pulmonary alveoli porcinosis. I know it's a mouthful, and Cormac will be able to tell you more about that going forward. But he wasn't 100% sure. So he said, I know a perfect man for you. It's Dr. Cormac McCarthy. He specialises in rare lung diseases and he's up in Vincent's. Would you be willing to meet him? And I was like, what are my options? So he's like, well, you can still go on oxygen. I was on oxygen at the time.
What was that like? So tell us, give us a sense of what your life was like.
Oh, wow. It was so debilitating. It was like to take a shower. I'd sit down with the oxygen tank fed over the shower head. I was sleeping at night with a concentrator that I nicknamed the Dragon because it was so loud. And it was just, I couldn't go out for more than an hour.
So you were on oxygen
everywhere. Yes.
All of the time?
Yes.
Right.
All of the time.
So that's, your life had changed dramatically because of this thing. So you're introduced to Cormac.
Yes.
And what happened then? And what did you think when you saw Linda? Were you pretty sure that this was what it was?
Well, I suppose the possibility was raised given the fact that she had this abnormal chest CT scan and not improving with the traditional treatments for pneumonia and other things. And it's a very rare condition, about 7 people per million. And when the question was raised, then it did certainly fit that it could be that. And we do have a very useful blood test, but it's not available in Ireland. We send it to the United States to diagnose this condition. This is an autoimmune condition, which means you have an antibody produced by your body that stops certain cells working in the lung. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, we were able to access this test in St. Vincent's and we send it to the US to get back. Now, it takes a couple of months to come back. We got a rapid one done for Linda because she was quite unwell. She required a lot of oxygen, even just sitting at rest, never mind walking. So we were highly suspicious that, yes, this could be autoimmune PAP or APAP.
Oh, it's so rare, though, as you
yes.
explained there.
Yeah.
7 in a million.
7 per million,
extraordinary.
Yes.
And what is going on in the lungs?
So in normal, healthy lungs, we produce a liquid called surfactant that lines your lungs and allows the lungs to expand and contract like a balloon without collapsing down. So that liquid is meant to be there. For example, in newborn babies, if you don't have that, who are born premature, that's why their lungs don't expand.
Right.
But in normal lungs are macrophages, they're a cell, and they recycle that. They turn that liquid over so that it kind of, you make some from your lung and then you clear it with these cells and make more. And what happens in autoimmune PAP is the patients have an antibody against those cells from a protein called GM-CSF. And that protein regulates these cells. But if you have an antibody that stops that working, these cells, they can't clear the fluid. The fluid builds up. And so in Linda's case, she would have had litres of this fluid building up in her lungs, stopping the lungs from being able to exchange oxygen, then also becoming prone to infection because the cells can't work and all this fluid attracts bacteria and bugs. And it becomes a vicious cycle that you can't clear any of this fluid and it gets progressively worse. You can't exchange oxygen, hence she would need the oxygen given to her supplementally.
Right. And the traditional treatment then, Cormac, is it to drain that fluid?
So the traditional treatment has been around about 50 years and it's what's called a whole lung lavage. What that requires is you need to get a general anaesthetic and you selectively intubate one lung. What I mean by that is you ventilate one lung, but put oxygen in and out, and then you put a tube into the other lung and you instill litres and litres, up to 50 litres of warmed saline, and try and
wash it out.
To wash it out, and you have to percuss or beat the chest to try and move this, because this liquid is not just water. It's very lipid rich. It's full of fat, and it's like getting, my old boss in America, where we learned how to do this, was it's like getting butter from a sponge. It's really hard to move it. And you have to do each lung separately over several weeks. And it's a general anaesthetic. It takes about 8 hours under a general anaesthetic.
And that's what Linda was facing.
So that's what she was facing. And when referred to me, she was wondering, was this what I need to have done now?
Right. How did you feel about that, Linda?
I was terrified, to be honest, because as part of a bronchoscopy, unfortunately, my right lung collapsed and I had to get a chest drain put in. I was on 12 litres of oxygen. I was on so much medication, and my partner came in and was like, are you right at all?
So the next prospect was this lavage, as has been described. Mm-hmm. But you didn't get to that point, did you?
No, thank God.
Mm-hmm. So what happened?
So fortunately, I was sick enough to go on the trial, but well enough to go on the trial. So I had to fit a very specific
Goldilocks.
Bracket. Goldilocks, exactly. So I was just thankful that I was so thankful to St. Vincent's that they gave me touch with the manufacturer, and that I was put in the Impala 2 trial, and that it's a success. Like, mm-hmm. to this day now, I don't have oxygen during the day, don't have oxygen at night, can travel, can shower, can do everything on my own. I have a new lease of life, and I'm so thankful to them.
Right, but you're still being treated, right?
I'm still being treated, yeah. Yes, correct.
But you're very well in comparison to how you were. So you made the decision, did you, Cormac, to put Linda forward for the trial?
Yeah, so thankfully, when I met Linda, we had an open... We were doing a recruitment for this international trial called Impala 2, which is a trial of this inhaled protein called GM-CSF, where you could give it directly to the lung and try and correct the abnormality. So this was a multinational study. We were doing it in St. Vincent's, and we were doing it through the University College Dublin Clinical Research Centre, where we run trials. And Linda was fortunate because it was about the last month of recruitment, because these are competitive recruitment where you can only get a certain number of patients internationally into them. Mm-hmm. So we had a conversation, either we do a whole lung lavage now or we go on this trial and see does it help you, because the risk of the trial is, for the first year, you could either be on placebo, so a dummy medication, or the real medication. So we didn't know. And Linda was fully aware of this, and we had that conversation. I don't know.
Do you know?
No, we don't know.
We don't know whether it's placebo or the real thing.
No, the investigators, such as myself, or our research nurses, or all of our team, we wouldn't know, and we still don't know. So Linda would have been on a blinded period for the first year, and then everybody in that trial got the drug for the second year. Right. The trial is complete now, and it's published. Mm-hmm. And it's been hugely beneficial to Linda, because we know her CT scan is now normal. Her lung function went from 30% to 75%, 80% being the totally normal lung function that we'd expect.
Incredible.
And she's off all oxygen. And there was always a risk that it wouldn't work or she'd still need a whole lung lavage. But thankfully, this study has been successful. And, you know, there's some good fortune that we were able to recruit her at that exact time.
So this drug then,
yeah.
Did it essentially dissolve that butter-like substance that you described?
Yeah, ultimately it allowed her cells to begin working properly as they should be in the lung. And then essentially they clear up all of that material, your own cells, because we're allowed to recalibrate them back to what they should be doing in a normal scenario. Mm-hmm. And so they clear it all up. So when you look at her CT scan, for example, where you could see all this material, and when you look at a CT scan 6 months and then a year later, all of that is gone.
So you could see within 6 months that it was cleared?
So I could see within 6 months when we saw in the clinic that the CT scan looked almost normal. So we'd suspect maybe she was on the drug. I can't be sure for the first year, but and certainly we've continued it now and on what's called an early access program, where after you've been on a trial, the company who sponsors that trial often will then provide the medication until it gets approved or until it gets reimbursed. And so
Linda, that's a separate process. And
yes.
Linda, how quickly you started the trial, not knowing whether you were on the placebo or the drug, how quickly did you start to cotton on, I think I'm getting something here that's working?
Within the 6 months, as Cormac said, I definitely felt better. I was able to walk further. I was able to put on less oxygen. I was just feeling the effects, and I was like, I think I might be on the medicine.
Mm-hmm. And how has that changed your life then, going from being on oxygen pretty much all of the time to now?
Oh, it's changed my life completely. I have a new lease of life. I remember being wheeled around in a wheelchair in Fort Island and in Dublin Zoo because I wasn't able to complete the walk on my own. And now I'm able to walk. I walked actually today from St. Vincent's to here, and I climbed the stairs, and that to me is amazing.
It's phenomenal, isn't it, to go from being a wheelchair user on a day out like that to doing that walk today, which is uphill, you know, and then braving the stairs and so on. It's incredible, isn't it, Cormac?
Oh, it's fantastic, and you know, and it's great to see success stories, because you know, not all medications have such dramatic effect, and in Linda's case, I think it's been wonderful to see, because you know, being a young woman on oxygen and not able to go anywhere or not able to work, and you can return all that great quality of life, I think that's what's really meaningful. Yeah. And these things are possible. Just because someone has a rare disease doesn't mean that we don't have potential treatments, and we've a lot better understanding of these different conditions, and we should be doing more trials and be doing more investigative, you know, studies to try and understand them, because they're life-changing. And it's not just you have to have something very common that we know about. We do have potential life-changing treatments for people.
I mean, I know this particular condition is rare, but when it comes to unusual respiratory presentations, we do have a special case in Ireland, don't we, in that we see more of these illnesses than you might in other areas.
Certainly some of them we have a higher frequency. Some of the genetic conditions we have a higher frequency. Like, for example, cystic fibrosis is a rare disease. Internationally, a rare disease is less than 1 in 2,000 people would have the disease. That's higher in Ireland for cystic fibrosis, but in most of the world it's less. So in that case, yes. Other genetic conditions, we have a higher propensity. Some of these very rare conditions, we're not sure if they're necessarily higher in Ireland. We're pretty good at picking them up at the moment, and we have really good doctors across the country who are increasingly aware of them. And then we have a network now of reference centres, you know, these ERNs or reference networks, that we can refer patients with rare lung diseases or other rare diseases that have different expert centres that we can speak about. And that's, I suppose, the benefit here, where, you know, Professor O'Brien in University Hospital Limerick did a great job and then said, I think this might be it. Can you help? And that's what we want to encourage, is, you know, cross collaboration and networks that help each other. It's not one hospital does one and the other. You
look
work
at
together.
The difference that decision made, you know, to refer to you and onwards from there. It's great to see you so well, Linda. And I'm so impressed that you made that walk up today. And, you know, you're in such great form. It's wonderful. It really is. And we had a new rare disease strategy, hadn't we, announced yesterday, or improvements to it by the Department of Health, which is good to see as well. Thank you both for coming in. Lovely to meet you both, and continued good health to you, Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So that's Professor Cormac McCarthy and Linda Sheehan. Thank you both. We're going to take a break, but coming up, controversy around plans to redevelop the former mother and baby home site in Bessborough in Cork. Brian O'Connell is going to bring us the details after this break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.